Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Profit Playbook Podcast. In this show, we discuss entrepreneurship, digital marketing, and how to grow a profitable online business with some of the best minds in the space. I'm your host, Tyler Narducci. I broke free of the 9-to-5 rat race back in 2015 by starting my own digital marketing agency and have since scaled it up to multiple 7 figures. Today, I run a consulting firm helping marketing agencies and B2B business owners rapidly scale their online businesses through our 100% done-for-you leads and sales program. We do this by fully automating your lead generation, sales, and client fulfillment. If you're interested in taking your agency or B2B business to the next level, then apply now at www.profitpeak.co. That's www.profitpeak.co. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. Now, let's dive into today's episode. The next episode of the Profit Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Narducci, and we have an incredible show for you guys today. I'm very excited to have our guest with us. I'm going to introduce you in just a second. But before we dive into that, I want to say whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or you're watching us on YouTube and you find value in this content, please drop us a like and consider subscribing. We have lots of good content coming out for you guys, and that way you won't miss a video. So without further ado, today I have with me Emmerich Ernolt. Did I say your last name right, Ernolt?
Yes, you did. The American way, but I love it too. So hey, Tyler, I'm super happy to be with you today.
Thank you. I knew my American accent was going to definitely affect your last name. But yeah. Guys, Emmerich is a serial entrepreneur with 25 years of experience in social media and SaaS, aka software as a service. Emmerich is a former digital marketing agency owner, and he is the CEO and co-founder of AgoraPulse, a Paris-based social media management software that was launched in 2011. AgoraPulse has 175 team members in 19 countries and is currently being used by more than 37,000 users across 180 countries. AgoraPulse is the only business in its industry that exceeded $20 million in annual revenue without raising any funds. So, super impressive credentials. Emmerich, thank you again for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. Yeah, that looks impressive.
Yeah, right? When you put it all together like that, it sounds pretty great.
Proud of the bootstrap, $20 million revenue with no funds raised, because that's very rare.
That's huge. Yeah, that is huge. So, I'm just going to dive right in here. First, I'm sure much of our audience can relate to you being a serial entrepreneur. I know I can myself. Can you tell us a little bit about your story and how it ended up with AgoraPulse?
Yeah, in a nutshell, because it's a long story. I'm 51 years old, so there's a lot to unpack there. But I started my career as a business lawyer, an M&A lawyer in Washington, D.C. In 1995. And in 2000, I saw the internet bubble before it was actually a bubble, and definitely before it burst.
Okay.
I was excited by the internet, and I said, oh, that's amazing, an amazing set of opportunities ahead of us. I want to seize that. And I had a friend then who was a web developer in an agency, and we met and we had a lot of brainstorming, and we came up with an idea, and this idea became our first business, and we launched that business in 2000. It was a SaaS business. It was not called SaaS in 2000. It was called ASP, Application Service Provider, and it was already social media, but it was not called social media in 2000. It was called Communities back then.
Okay.
And it started then. That business struggled for many, many years. And just to give the listeners an idea of the struggle, we launched it in 2000 or very early 2001. And in 2010, that business was still around and it was making $150,000 a year. As of today, with AgoraPulse, I'm making $115,000 a day almost.
Wow.
So that gives you the benchmark of, after 10 years of business number one, we made an amount of money that we make in a day with business number two. So
but
that was a struggle. That was hard. Hence the agency. We'll get to that. And we pivoted several times. We started by being a B2C service like Facebook. We basically tried to be Facebook in 2000. Wrong country, wrong timing, got all wrong. So in entrepreneurship, timing is everything. And slowly moved to white label, B2B. So selling our technology to bigger brands who were using it for their own needs. And then building communities for brands. And then that was really hard to sell. Telling brands, hey, you should build your own community site. And trust me, 2006, that was a hard sell.
Yeah. And, much more understandable now.
Oh, yeah. Now you have mighty networks and plenty of services that do that.
School. Yeah.
Yeah. It's much more common and it's understood. Back then, it was, what is that? Why would I do that? So, because we had so much trouble trying to sell the technology, we started an agency on top of the technology. I say, okay, in order to sell the technology, let's build an agency that will provide the advice, the guidance, you know, the briefs and like the service basically around the product, and then we can sell the product. So basically, we started the agency out of the need to sell the product because the product alone was impossible to sell or really, really hard to sell. And so our agency was specialized in building communities and helping brands, you know, leverage community that they would build and animate themselves. That was in 2007 to 9. In 2009 and 10, Facebook was becoming a thing. And I think the fan pages started in 2008 or 2009. And around that time, the fan pages, yeah. Hey, get more fans and all that stuff that was around 2009. And when that started, the objections I was getting at the agency level when we were trying to sell the service and the software that went with it, mm-hmm. the objection was always, why would I go with your thing? Or why would I build my own community when I can go seize the community that are going to be built on Facebook already on those yeah. pages? Like, there was a say at the time, fish where the fishes are, basically. I say, all yeah. the fishes are on Facebook. That's where I should fish. And the objections became so big that in 2010, at the end of 2010, I told my co-founder, "We're not. That's not going to work. That Facebook wave is too big. It's going to crush us. So we have to surf it. If we try to go against it, we're going to be crushed. Let's surf it." And we started to totally randomly. We started to build Facebook contests and promotions. You know, sweepstakes, photo contests, quizzes, those kind of apps. I don't know if you're around yeah. in 2011, but it was all the rage back then. Every yeah. brand and their sister wanted to have a contest on their page. Why? Well, to get more fans. And hey, enter the sweepstakes and win an iPad, but you have to become yeah. a fan to win the iPad. So it was everywhere. I think at the time we had like 10 competitors doing the same thing. And today we have not. This industry has disappeared entirely. That's telling you how fast our industry yeah. is moving and spreading. I mean, the tech industry. And we did that as an agency. Again, we used the tech, but we were selling bespoke apps, right? It was bespoke software. And so it was very much an agency business. And to be completely honest and transparent, we didn't like this agency business at the time. We yeah. really liked the software aspect of it, like the repeatable product aspect of the business.
And that's what you were doing mostly, was creating customized software for your clients at the time.
Yeah, but it was each of them were not, they were not scalable. We were building the software and then selling it 10K, 12K, and then building another one and another one. The level of scale in it was not good enough for me.
And it sounds grindy.
Yeah, it was very grindy. But there's a piece of information that you need to know about. At that time, 2010, when we were doing that, I was basically paying myself minimum wage or close to minimum wage. Because again, we were making 150K a year. So how much yeah. can you pay yourself when you're a company of two or three and the turnover is 150K a year? When I was a lawyer, an M&A lawyer at 27, I was making 12K a month. So I basically moved from a service business making 12K a month to a service business making 1,500 a month. And I thought, something's wrong here. Yeah. I made the wrong choice. I made the wrong decision. Yeah. And as an entrepreneur, you know, and everybody who's listening to this know that failing is your daily routine, right? You fail, you fail, you fail. Oh, you succeed. Good for you. Lucky yeah. you. I feel good. But we fail all the time. We make mistakes all the time. We make wrong decisions all the time. But when it's long and when it's like a decade and you look back and you say, why did I quit that job? Well-paid job, you know, in a good company, having a good position, having a good social recognition and all that stuff, things can become really hard. So things were becoming really hard for me and I was starting to regret my choice, to be perfectly honest at that time.
Yeah.
And we saw a company in the US called Wildfire getting started. And basically what Wildfire was doing was allowing businesses to create their own Facebook contest and promotion, self-serve. And we saw that, and by the way, Wildfire was acquired by Google $450 million 2 or 3 years later, and then shut down by Google. You know, Google has a specialty of buying companies and shutting them down. And we saw that, and we thought, that's exactly what we want to do. That is software. It leverages all we've built so far. So we industrialized all the contests and promotion into a platform that was self-serve, that you would pay $29, $49, $99 a month, depending on how many contests and entries you needed to have. And we launched it in September 2011, and that was Agora Polls. So that's the story of Agora Polls. That's how it got launched. Funny enough, today, there's no more contest promotion or anything like that in the product as it exists, you know, 13 years later. Like, it's completely
well,
gone.
Well, like you said, that industry, the contest wave is, now if I see a contest, I'm like, oh, God, I run.
But, you know, that's it's important to keep that in mind because, you know, I you probably heard the quote or the say already that the business that win are the business that are able to adapt the fastest. And when I look back at my story, I say, what the hell? Adaptation was like every freaking month or something. And it was, we had to adapt all the time, and we've adapted so much, and we're still adapting now. Like, we're moving from SMB to mid-market, from inbound to outbound. Like, it's constantly, what do I need to change if I want to be alive in 3 years? I mean, thriving, of course, but alive as well. Like, it's there's always a change, a profound change that needs to be made in your business to keep up with how your industry is evolving. So that's the story of Agora Post, basically, in a nutshell. And then we moved to social media management full stack because we realized that contests and promotion were a very bad business with high churn, very, very low sustainability and repeatability. And basically, your growth potential was a very low ceiling to your growth because of that high churn. So we said, okay, what do we need to do? Well, you know, publishing and engagement and listening and reporting. Okay, we need to do something that someone in the company is using every day. That's mm-hmm. the key for success. If you're not used by a specific function in the company every day, then you don't exist. So who is that person? That's the social media person or the marketer in charge of social media. Okay, what do they need? They need this and this and that. You know, Buffer was already there back then, and so was Hootsuite. And so there was already an emerging industry of social media management in late 2011 and 2012. So we saw the direction, and we started to work towards that. So with three developers, it took a very long time, but we eventually made it.
It's a great story. And I think the main thing that a lot of people are going to pull from it is just the, you know, resilience and consistency that you have to have as an entrepreneur in order to make it at all, number one, and then sustain. I mean, to go from, you know, the whole 11 years and not, you know, get wiped out by either a wave of Facebook or a, you know, a changing market. And, you know, I also, when you were talking about how the contest thing is all gone now, like, I always wondered, even then, I'm like, the contest types of likes aren't good likes. Like, they're just people trying to get an iPad. They don't care about your brand or your business. So collecting all those likes, like, it doesn't really, so it kind of is a nice thing to see that part of the industry has changed. When you were originally starting Agora Pulse, like, what was your vision for it? And did it unfold the way you wanted it to? Was the vision always like contests, and you just kind of realized that it was needed to go to social media, or how did that evolve?
Yeah, well, obviously, a lot of the vision evolved over the years. One thing I want to say, just to put everybody at ease, especially the ones who feel like, I don't have a vision, so I feel inadequate because of that. I've never seen myself as a visionary. Maybe I am, but I've never seen myself as a visionary, because for me, a visionary has always been like Elon Musk. He has a vision. He wants to go on Mars. Oh, that's a vision, right? That's a hell of a vision. He wants to kill the internal combustion engine and save the planet by having an electric car. Oh, fuck, that's a vision as well. I've never seen myself as someone who would come with an enormous project that would have a huge impact on the planet, on the world, on people. I've always seen myself as a grinder, a hustler, who like doing the hard work to make something good happen by responding to a need on the market. And that sounds very not sexy, but that's the entrepreneur I've been. And in the early days, my vision was? It was surviving. That was my vision. How do I get to next month and do the paychecks I need to make next month? And how do I make this business live another month, live another quarter, live another year? That was my vision, really, frankly. We launched Agora Pulse. There was something I was really excited about, which was, and it's funny because our homepage was based on our homepage was that. If you don't know who your Facebook fans are, they aren't worth anything. So that was the baseline. And in order to solve for that, what we had is that our contest and promotion were gathering emails and any kind of information you wanted to ask them in a forum. And because they were Facebook signing with us, with our app, we had their Facebook unique ID at the time. Now this is gone. Like, you know, Cambridge Analytica, yada, yada, yada. All that is completely impossible today. And if they commented on the page, we had their Facebook ID as well. So we went, oh, that person who commented here, this is their email. This is the company they work for. This is the address they live at, and then so on and so forth. We were able to match who you are when you interact with the page and who you are, you know, email-wise, CRM-wise, because we had captured all that information through the content. And so our promise to the world was that. And I love that promise to the world. Today, that promise is impossible. Facebook has removed all of that for good reason or bad reason.
Today, data privacy.
Data privacy, GDPR, CCPA, CCPA, all that stuff. But that was a promise. And today, our vision is that we want to help people who are working on social media see the actual business value of their work by measuring ROI, measuring revenue, measuring conversion, measuring website visit that came from organic social media work, whether it's a comment, a private message, or a post, or anything like that. And that's the only common, that's the common thread between the 2011 vision and the 2024 vision. But apart from that, it's always been a challenge for me to build a vision and propose a vision to the world, because I didn't see myself as a visionary. If there is one book people can read about vision, it's called Vivid Vision. I love this book, Vivid Vision, V-I-V-I-D, Vision. And it opened my eyes on the fact that I could build a vision, because what the book says is basically, your vision is how you see your company in 3 years, but in all details. How many people? Where is the headquarter? How does the office look like? Who do you sell to? What do you sell? Why do you sell it? Like, what problem do you solve? And I think every entrepreneur can relate to that. They have a view in their mind of how they would like to see their business to be at in 3 years. They kind of know that. 10 years too long, a year is too short. You have no time to achieve anything in 1 year. But in 3 years is kind of enough time to achieve something big and to project yourself into a better future that excites you. And I think all of us, we can do that. So that's how I learned to write. So now we have a vision, Vivid Vision document that you can actually download it on our website, I think, on our career page. And it is a lot about helping people working on social media prove that what they're doing is worth doing, and go to their client, their customers, and say, look, this is what I achieved for you thanks to my social media work. Oh, that's amazing. Agency, you're so good. I love you. And for the person working internally, hey, boss, this is what I've done. Okay, well, you're worth your salary. Keep doing the good job, and so on and so forth. So that is the vision for the product. And obviously, in order to achieve that, you have to do a bazillion number of things for social media to work and the APIs to connect and all that stuff. But that's the vision.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of that was the very beginning, really, is giving people a pass on not having like that burning desire to change the world. Because if we all had to, that was the benchmark for having a business or being an entrepreneur. Yeah. I mean, literally no one would really, tough. I mean, a handful would be like Elon Musk and Oprah sitting in a room, and that would be like the world's entrepreneurs. No,
there are
so
two entrepreneurs.
It'd be
Elon Musk, everybody else, not worth it.
Correct. So, a lot of people get that mixed up, because I think in the entrepreneurial space, you have a lot of noise. That's like my one of my least favorite things is the whole like follow your passion. You have to follow your passion thing. And like I've experienced myself and seeing other entrepreneurs, like you can develop a passion for the thing that you're working on regularly. Like you may not have had a passion for social media software But as you started building this company and really falling in love with it and growing it, like there, then now you all of a sudden have a passion, but you didn't like come out of the womb with this burning passion for social media software. And I think it's something that people get wrong a lot.
100%. I 100% heartfully agree with that. When you think about service businesses and agencies in particular, you can have a passion for solving your customer's problem.
Yeah,
you can have a passion for solving someone's problem or making someone's marketing efficient. That is enough of a passion to get you wake up in the morning and be excited about the day to come, right? You don't mm-hmm. have to have a grand vision of how you're going to impact the world.
Yeah,
and I so agree with you on that. That's why the Vivid Vision book was such a revelation to me, because your Vivid Vision could be in 3 years we will help 150 businesses get their marketing efficient and running with a HubSpot or Salesforce instance that's give them accurate data on a daily basis. That could be your vision, and that works. It's perfectly okay to view the impact you want to have on your industry that way. It doesn't have to be conquer Mars and revolutionize the car industry, because if it's that, then none of us are adequate.
yeah. So let's talk a little bit about social media. A lot of our listeners are digital marketing agency owners. A lot of them have social media marketing as a service that they provide their clients. And so they're dealing with this stuff day to day. And one major trend that, has been happening for many years now, but I think it's really vivid now, is a decline in organic social media reach. Mm. So is this something that you think is going to continue to eventually just be, there won't be organic, it's just all paid? Or do you think it's kind of like leveled out and this is like where we're going to be at?
Yeah, well, it's hard to give an overall answer for all social networks and for all situation and all types of business, obviously. I have a couple of buddies here who are superstars on LinkedIn, and it's entirely organic, and they're being seen on LinkedIn like dozens of thousands of times every time they post something, because they built a LinkedIn follower and they write on topics that gets people excited and stuff. And there are a bunch of people who are super famous on LinkedIn, and LinkedIn for a personal brand is mostly organic. You have no possibility to pay for your own reach, and most of those people, they're individuals, they're not company pages or companies presence. So and I see the same thing on Twitter as well. So it's not the same situation on every social network. There may be social network where you can still have good organic reach in a way, like for example, if the company pages on LinkedIn are not doing so well, then maybe make the CEO be the star of the show on LinkedIn, and then you get organic reach through the CEO or through someone else in the team, which is more risky if they're not founders. They may leave.
Yeah, right.
Oh shit, all my brand awareness is gone with the person.
Yeah.
But on if you look at something like Instagram or Facebook, yeah, it's less and less. But it's been less and less. I'm not sure it's still less and less. Haven't we reached a low plateau in that organic reach?
Yeah, I would say it seems like it's leveled off because there's not much lower to go. Like yeah. as the baseline, right? Where is it? On TikTok, there's like 200 view hell where people just get stuck in there, and that all their content gets shown to 200 people. And then, but I think, what I tell my clients and what I, see in the industry is that you can still definitely win in organic social media. The value has to be there. The content has to be good. The benchmark's higher, I think, now than ever, because you just have a lot of people putting out a lot of content all the time. And you can't,
not good.
There's not
through the roof.
Not good. Yeah.
Through the roof.
It needs to be, you need to, if you want to win in organic social, it needs to be very, very good content, well put together and consistent.
If you take a benchmark in another digital marketing area, what about SEO? Is it easy to be number one on Google for a search? Hell no, it's not.
No.
It's super hard.
Yeah.
So why would social media be different? Why would it be easy to put crappy content on social and get millions of views? And it wouldn't be easy to put crappy content on your blog and get millions of views because you're number one on Google.
That's a great point, but I think the reason that people are frustrated is because it used to be easy. It's because when in those golden years of the social media giants kind of coming of age, you used to be able to put out anything and get a lot of likes and it would go everything, but then paid really took over, right? And so the amount of views that you can get all those views are very, very valuable to the brands that are paying for those. So to cut through that with organic, you really have to have a high level of value provided there, you know? And another thing that I kind of focus on and I tell my clients is like, look, you don't have to go viral to make an impact. You don't have to have a whole bunch of likes. You don't have to have a whole bunch of shares. You don't have to have a whole bunch of stuff. What you do need to do is you do need to be able to reach the right people at the right time. So for a digital marketing agency, you know, if you're taking sales calls and you're trying to sell your digital marketing packages or whatever, in that sales process, let's say you had a first call, went really well, and now your second call is in 2 days. During those 2 days, that client's going to be looking you up and doing their research before they consider buying with you. If they go to your social media profiles and you have nothing there, it's a ghost town, you're losing a lot of credibility. So just showing up and putting good, valuable content out there, even if it's not seen by millions of people, if it's seen by the right person at the right time, then you're going to gain that client. And that will have been, gaining that next high ticket client, in my opinion, is a lot more valuable than having 1,000 likes on a post. Because 1,000 likes ain't dollars. You know what I mean?
There's a whole lot of topic behind what you've just shared, but what I would add to that, if you cannot do that, then don't have a presence. If you cannot maintain a minimum amount of quality content that makes you look good, then don't have a profile. So shut it down. I'm seeing this and I'm thinking we probably have profiles where we should do better, but social media has always been it's been a challenge for us, having the right social media person. I had one, he just resigned, so I have to replace him now. If anyone is interested in this bilingual French and English, I'm Harry.
There you go.
I don't know when the episode will air though. So if it's in June, maybe I will have already found someone. But just to get back to that, if you have a presence, you absolutely need to invest in having a minimum level of quality there, like a frequency in quality, because otherwise you're definitely hurting yourself, to your point. Now, does that excite people? No. Does that make social media the channel they should invest on? No. But every business, if they have opened the presence and are an intent to keep it, they need to find a way to maintain it in a way. If you have a blog and you've stopped posting on it in 2017, what does it say about you? Same thing, right? Shut down your blog, man. I mean, there's nobody's going to go there and be blown away by what you post. So it's the same thing. And you're right. Spending the time and energy to create something of value, so when people stumble into it, they're not being pushed away. Definitely a must do.
You need to give them something to find. You know, people are smart shoppers today. You know, if you're a digital marketing agency, you're trying to sell digital marketing services, just understand that people are shopping. Like you may think that you have the deal in the bag, but they're probably talking to two or three other agencies as well, and they're going to be doing research on them. You're going to be put up against, I mean, that's the internet today, right? And so if you're going to be, in the digital marketing space, in my opinion, you need to have you need to be able to manage your own presence as well, and do it well. So like I said, you don't have to go viral. You don't have to have millions of likes, but you do need to have provide consistent value and give the specific people that it matters to the most, in terms of your bottom line, something to find, so that you have that credibility. There's a lot of, credibility and trust and authority to be built in the social media space for a service-based business.
Yeah. The challenge is when your business is real small and your resources are highly limited, have to make choices. You cannot have a great blog, a great social media presence, a good review site presence, a great everything. So you have to make choices. That's why in some instances, I'm advising people to shut down their social profiles and get back to them later when you're ready and you have the bandwidth and the people. But right now, you shouldn't be. There are businesses who should not focus on social media because this is not the best channel for them. The best channel for
them. What would be an example of a business that you think? Because for our audience, digital marketing agencies, I think is a good. It would be a little weird. It would be a little weird if there was no presence at all for a digital marketing agency. I wouldn't purchase. Yeah. from a digital marketing agency with no social media.
No, for sure. I mean, that's funny enough you say that. That's the same thing for us. Our presence right now is not good. I'm not happy. I'm not proud of it. It's really subpar. And following your advice, we should have one because we sell social media management software. So it should look great. And we're not in that position. So we are definitely part of that set of people who should maintain a better presence and invest in it.
You're out here doing podcast interviews as the founder. So you're not doing nothing. I mean, you're definitely out there.
No, you're right. But I'm also running marketing right now because I had to part ways with my CMO in October. So I'm doing a lot and I could not do social media on top of that. But we should look great on social based on who we are and what we do. So back to your question, I think businesses that are like industrial businesses, you know, manufacturing businesses, those kind of businesses, probably not. I'm thinking about, you know, law firms, accountants. I'm not sure they should be on Facebook sharing memes all day. They probably should have a blog. They probably should have a podcast. They probably, I would look at expert service business like accounting and architecture and lawyers. You have a ton of expertise to share, and I'm not sure a Facebook page or a Twitter account is the right place to share your expertise. I'd rather share the expertise in long form content that's either visual or audio or video. Maybe YouTube is the place. But YouTube is social media, so I'm basically saying the opposite. But if I was a lawyer, because I used to be a lawyer, as you know, I would focus entirely on written content. I would go Medium plus, you know, my own blog or something like that. Medium for distribution and my own blog for ownership. So I'm sure I keep the SEO and everything under my name in my domain. But I would probably not go Twitter. It's too short. You know, showing your expertise in law does not stand in 280 characters. You need more space. So Twitter's not X. Apologies. X is not going to be the place.
I still call it Twitter too.
Me too. Yeah. It's hard. You know, Instagram. No way. It's photos and videos. It doesn't work.
I would. But see, if you were a lawyer and you're speaking to somebody and they're looking you up, right, to see who you are. A great website is a must. I mean, great you website, have to have a really good, beautiful
blog,
mobile
regular content and LinkedIn. I think that's what I would do. Yeah,
absolutely. So, and I don't think it would hurt to have YouTube for a lawyer either,
You have to love being on camera. Yeah. I know people who hate being on camera. Do not do it if you hate it. It will not work.
It shows.
And you're not going to have fun doing it. And if you do something and you don't have fun doing it, guess what happens?
Yeah.
You don't, it's not sustainable.
It's not
gonna
last.
It's not going to last. You will not sustain the effort. It's like going to the gym. You have to eventually enjoy going to the gym because if you're going to the gym 10 times, it's not going to have any impact. You have to go to the gym 1,000 times and then suddenly you'll be stronger. You have muscles and so on, six packs and so on and so forth. But you at some point get to enjoy because every time you go to the gym, it's like, oh shit, I have to go to the gym. Oh shit, I have to record myself on camera. I would not do that if I was feeling that way. So that's super important. So back to your question again. Given the fact that, you know, you have such a variety of social networks, maybe manufacturing is really hard on social media.
Yeah.
Maybe even Facebook, LinkedIn would be hard. But
those type of like contracts, labor style jobs, I don't think are necessarily
home builders. Well, home builders, you can have an amazing Instagram.
Yes,
with the stuff you build, how it looks like before and after, those kind of stuff.
There's a small. I think you're right. There's a small percentage of businesses that are going to be minimally helped with yeah. social media. But for the vast majority of B2B businesses, I think, and service-based businesses like digital marketing agencies, definitely social media can help. So, you know, you run a software company that, you know, has 37,000 users using social media in all different types of ways. You know, I imagine that you're going to be a little biased on this question, but how integral, not thinking about the businesses that we just spoke about, those contractor and labor style businesses, but how integral to an overall marketing plan do you think is social media for the ones that can benefit from it? Is it something that is an absolute must have, or, you know, is it more casual? You know, I have my own opinion on it, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised. I'm actually not. I will probably not say what you would expect me to say as a social media management software business owner. I am more going to respond to you as a business owner than a social media management software business owner. As a business owner, the one thing I have learned in 25 years is that priority and focus is everything. Like if you spread yourself too thin, you're dead. That's it.
Yeah.
Your business is over. And in that quest for what is the one thing I should be spending all my time on today or this week or this month, oftentimes social media is not going to be the answer. Something else is going to be the answer. And maybe that something else will be the answer for 6 months, for a year, for 2 years, and then you've nailed it, you've delegated it, then you can move to something else. And maybe at one point in that journey, social media will become that thing. Like, let me give you a very, very pragmatic example from this morning. So we have a retail customer as a business, but they are on a pretty small contract right now. They don't pay us as much. And this morning we had a call with them because they contacted us and said, okay, so we had this little small contract with you. We have a couple of users and for a couple of our main company profiles. And okay. And they were paying $1,000 a month. That was good money, but for that kind of company, that was a small contract. And they came to us and said, okay, we have 160 stores. Okay. Now we want our 160 stores to all be posting on their own social profiles, on their own Facebook, and next on their own Instagram. And then we'll start with Facebook, but then we're going to move on to the rest. And suddenly for this company, social was kind of an afterthought until now. We have, you know, a Facebook or this or that. Someone needs to take care of them. Let's buy software and have someone internally take care of that. And now it's like, oh, okay. Well, actually now we think it's becoming strategic that our local people are creating local content about their local promotions and their local products and their local, you know, happenings and events and that kind of stuff. And they need to have their own social presence and manage it and run it. And that contract's probably going to need to expand 10x for us, maybe. We'll see. But for them, the importance social media took within their business moved from, yeah, why not, to, wow, that's strategic, super important. We need to invest in that.
Yeah.
And that's illustration of what I've just said. You know, it doesn't have to always be an important thing, but it can be not important, not so important at some point, and then become important, and then become very important, and then maybe become not so important again because you tried something. Let's say this customer, they try it, they believe in it, they think it's going to be a great management tool for them as well, employer branding and everything, that they give them the reins of their presence and they can do what they want with that with very little control. They think that they're going to be excited by that, the employees of the stores. Maybe they will not be excited. Maybe they won't give a damn. And maybe it's just the CEO dreaming that everybody is going to rally behind this initiative. Maybe it fails and maybe it becomes something they don't focus so much again. So it's a hard, it's impossible to answer your question and say yes or no. There's no black and white. I've seen businesses thrive on social and do amazing things on social media. And I've seen businesses like to really have very terrible results.
and that can hurt you worse than, like you said earlier, not even being on it at all.
Yeah. And that, for those, my advice was always, you know, shut it down. I mean, I know you're paying me money and you're using our software, but frankly, if I was your advisor, I would not be on social media. I would just shut it down.
Yeah.
And it's a case by case answer depending on the situation.
I think in most cases, social media is a good piece of the marketing puzzle. Like it, there's a lot of things that can go into it. It's easy as a single business owner, if you as a, you know, one man band, to get overwhelmed with trying to keep up with everything. That's why when I tell people to, you know, to be on social media, you're like, if it's just you and you're running it all by yourself and you don't have any help, you definitely have to pick channels. You can't be on all of them and be on all of them well. You're like, YouTube is an entire monster in and of itself. Like, to really exceed on YouTube, you have to do, you know, a lot of video editing, a lot of, and there's a lot of work that goes into that, right? And then Twitter is a completely different model. I mean, I'm not even on X anymore. I mainly do Threads now, which I really like Threads. I feel like it's growing really quickly, but it's just the same medium. It's like that quick, you know, 280 character style thing. And it's like my favorite channel right now, because Threads feeds my Instagram. Because I put out content on Threads, and then it's easily shared over to Instagram, and then they speak to each other so well that you can put in one amount of effort and double it across both platforms because they're so intermingled now. But yeah, you got to pick a handful and really provide a lot of value to make it work. But if you're in an industry like a digital marketing, you need to be able to digitally market it yourself, and so that pick your channels. Go all in, and you know, don't give up, because as you've heard from our interview today, it takes a lot of work over a lot of years to really, you know, get to be, what did you say you guys are at now? 150K a day?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. That doesn't happen overnight. It takes a lot about you know, a lot of consistency with that. I did want to ask you, I have a few more questions for you before we wrap this up. First off, and you have to be biased on this one. There's definitely not a surprise answer, but should social media be measured? And if so, what should we do with that data?
Yeah. So I am biased because I'm the reason I'm biased is not the one you think, it's not because we sell, you know, as a ROI measurement, product within the product. And by the way, I filed a U.S. patent for that. So that we're the only one measuring ROI on social media the way we're doing it. It's a bit complex. So I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of it. You know, the reason I'm biased is because as a business owner, as a CEO, when I look at my marketing team, when I look at the different functions, the different jobs, and things are tough, there's a recession. You know, the business is not growing as fast as we expected. Sales is struggling. When I look at all these functions, I look at them with an analytical eye. That's all about what value they bring to the business. Should I keep this? Should I get rid of them? Should I replace them? Should I let them go? Should I do a layoff? And as a business owner, every function of the business, especially every function of the marketing business, will be analyzed with this bias. Are they worth paying? Or what would happen if I was letting them go tomorrow? What would be the consequence on the business? And if you are the person in that job, you don't want the answer to be nothing. I don't know. I don't even know. You know, I'm not sure. Because when things get really tough, and things have gotten really tough in the past year and a half for sure. I don't know for you, but for us, the business has been much more difficult since half 2022. Before it was much better, much easier. Yeah. When things get really tough, you don't want to be the one that nothing's being measured for. Like you don't want to be in a seat that has no KPI, no scorecard, no metrics that mean something to the C-suite. You want to be the one that raises, in my job, that's what we create. We generate business impact, and that's how we measure it. So yeah, the answer is yes, because not because the software I do can do that, because you can do it without the software. It's hard work and manual work. You can figure that out.
Very tedious, I'm sure.
It is, because if you're an agency, you're not going to keep customers if you cannot prove the value of what you're doing to them. And if you're an individual contributor within a business doing social media for them as, you know, as a marketing function, you're not going to keep your job if things get tough and you cannot raise your hand and say, well, this is the business value I created last quarter for the business. And the CMO or the CEO or the CFO look at you and say, oh, yeah, that's good. Great. Well, keep up the good work. And that's why I'm still passionate about what I'm doing with the business, because we can help with that and I can help with that. And I feel that's a purpose I like having. And, yeah. I took over marketing in October, and since then I squashed, like, every time someone says brand awareness, dude, no, pause.
Yeah.
Brand awareness, I don't care. You can't measure any of that. What else do you have for me? And I am in that seat of, if it's not measured, if it doesn't bring any actual business value, that is a business value that I understand and that makes sense to me, then stop doing it. And social media is definitely in that bucket, where how do you create business value if your social media activities, if there's none, then stop doing it. I don't know how you're a business owner too, and I don't know how you look at those things, but and if that relates, or if you think I'm a Nazi or something.
No, I agree with you. When I very first started my own digital marketing agency back in 2014, but really got going in 2015, one of the main things that I did was social media marketing, and I would help businesses. You know, there was a big shift of, you know, more older generation boomer run businesses that just didn't know how to do it. And they wanted to hire the millennials at the time to do it. And so that, you know, was able, I took, rode that wave to catapult my own agency. You know, I had a full-time job doing social media marketing, but then I started my own agency because I'm like, I can crush it here. I can do this for a lot of other people as well. And, you know, I held onto those metrics on all my reporting calls and all my in-person meetings. Like they were, you know, like you said, that's the proof of what I'm doing, right? And without those metrics, without those numbers on all the posts and everything that we're doing, we didn't have any way to prove that we were valuable at all. And so those were really the crux of proving the value of that marketer and that role for, you know, my business. So I think it's very important, you know.
Yeah, it could be visibility based. So that's, you can measure everything about how visible your business is becoming thanks to that. It can also be revenue based or conversion based. And that's the space where we added the innovation on measuring, you know, precisely measuring web traffic, web conversion, and revenue generated from social. And
yes,
you know, once you see that we have a customer e-commerce business track everything, so for them it's easier. But when they see that they can make 15 to 20,000 a month on Twitter, or another one that makes close to 40,000 on Instagram through direct messages, stories, and direct messages, they knew that this their tactics were working on social, but they didn't know how much. Now they know exactly how much, and that is life changing for them, because now the person who is head of that, yes, there's all the visibility, there's all the fun, there's all the engagement. That's amazing. And the CEO understands that. But she definitely understands the 20K of business that have been closed through direct messages on Instagram.
And that I think it's a huge step of you guys moving into tracking ROI from it. Because that's what, at the end of the day, though, it's the one KPI that matters the most, right?
It is. It is. The objection that you get when you start talking about that is, yeah, but there's dark social. There's so much you will not be able to track. It's true. You cannot, you know, based on the technicalities of how you attribute and track things on the web in digital, there are many, many conversions and purchases that you're not going to be able to track, because they're going to change device in the journey. Something's going to happen that's going to break the technical tracking. So you're only going to track, let's call it the tip of the iceberg, if you're only tracking a small portion of the conversions. But what I keep telling to people, if there's no tip, there's no iceberg. if you cannot see a tip of the iceberg somewhere, then there's probably no iceberg there. So right. you should be measuring at least for that, to see, do I see tips? You know, do I see the beginning of something? And if I do see that, then there's probably more that I cannot see, because the technicality of web tracking and digital tracking is imperfect and incomplete. but that will inform you that, okay, when I do that, I see a tip, but I know it's bigger, and that informs me that I can do more of that, and I may see a bigger tip if I do so. And I think that's the key here. Like, don't see that as the grail, as the, that's the end of it. It's everything has been measured. No, it's only a portion of the events, but at least it will give you the level of insights that you need to do more of that and less of this.
Love that. So one last question for you. This is a question that I end every episode with all of our guests on. What would be your number one piece of advice for a brand new business owner that is just starting out today?
Number one piece of advice for brand new business owners that are starting out. Oh, that's a loaded question.
I know, because there's a lot out there, but
there's so much.
Pull one out.
Wow. The very obvious one that we all don't do enough of when we start our own business, and that I keep seeing people not do, and they should be doing more of, is be more curious with the target market you want to serve. Like, ask more questions, go deeper into understanding the why. Don't build a business based on the gut feeling that you have that, oh, I think the market needs this or that, let's go build it. Or I think the market needs that kind of service, let's go provide it or offer it. Go one-on-one, do discovery conversations, discovery calls, like try to understand, you know, what are your pains? Why is this a pain? Why do you solve it this way and not that way? Why did you decide to do that on a spreadsheet and not hire someone or not buy a software for this or whatever it is? We don't ask enough questions. And that's a big thing in sales, right? The best salespeople, they are the ones who ask the best questions. And keep asking questions after one after the other. We don't do enough of that. Human beings are not wired to pay attention to others and to listen to others and to be curious about others. They are wired to be interested by themselves.
Yeah.
You know that's crazy stat that when you hear something, if you hear your name, that's all you remember. Like, you're always on the lookout for your name and your image. When you see a picture and you're in the picture, you immediately see yourself. Like, I forgot why I heard that, but we are wired to be interested by ourselves. And being a good salesperson, which is very close to being a good entrepreneur, is to be the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Is to be interested by the customer you're going to serve, the employee you're going to hire and grow. And so how do you do that? Well, you're more curious. And you learn to be genuinely curious, like really wanting to know more about, hey, Tyler, I want to know more about you. Tell me, how is your agency doing? Why did you do it this way? Why did you position it that way? Why is the messaging like that? What's your problem? Where do you suffer? What is the pain for you today? How can I help you? When you do that, you become a better salesperson, you become a better entrepreneur, and your business has more chances to thrive because you give yourself more space and chance to really understand what problem you can solve to have an impact and make more money. Because when you solve big problems, you make big bucks. That's how it works.
That, honestly, I really think that is great advice, because it's going to help you in the beginning. You don't want to make an assumption. You build a whole company based on an assumption. You're assuming that this target market has this problem. And so you're building a whole company to solve a problem if you haven't really dug into that and found out. It's going to help you sell better. Like you said, if you know, sales are all, you should be talking like 20% and letting them talk 80% as you should be asking questions. And it's going to help you even when you have a existing growing business. Ask your own clients also for more feedback. Are they enjoying the product? Are they enjoying the service? What would they change about it? So staying curious and not, you know, feeling like you have it figured out, whether you're in the very beginning or, you know, you're making 150K a day, is great advice. So Emmerich, thank you again for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure. That was fun.
That's going to be it for today's episode. If you're ready to take your marketing agency or B2B business to the next level and have your leads, your sales, and your client fulfillment all done 100% for you, then apply now at www.profitpeak.co. That's www.profitpeak.co. There will be a clickable link in the podcast show notes below. See you on the next episode of the Profit Playbook Podcast.